All right, 30 seconds is up. Good morning again.
Morning.
We're going to finish our discussion on inappropriate anger this morning by considering three final examples. These are all kings, and therefore they were in positions of power and authority. They were used to calling the shots and probably getting their own way. And each of them made some mistakes, and they were confronted about their mistakes, and they got angry. That's what we're going to discuss next. Rather than do them each one at a time, we're going to just look at this chart here. And if you have your Bibles up there, King Asa, this is something, if we had to do the color coding, red versus green, how would you color him, red or green? Was he a good king? Yeah. Both Asa and Uzziah would be green. They were very good kings overall. However, like all of us, they were not perfect. Now let's look at 2 Chronicles chapter 16, and we'll just read a few verses here to lead up to the account of Asa's anger. This is a rather obscure account of someone who got angry, but I think it's worth looking at. We'll just sort of paraphrase the first few verses here, beginning at verse 1. So we're in 2 Chronicles chapter 16. And what we find in verse 1, when Asa was reigning, the king of Israel, who was Baasha, opposed him. And he built the city in Ramah. Asa brought out in verse 2 silver and gold out of the treasures of the house of the Lord and sent it to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria. And in verse 3, 4, what Asa wasn't in fact doing was paying Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, to go against Baasha, king of Israel. And that is what happened there. And in verse 5, once Baasha heard that the king of Syria was coming against him, he left off building Ramah. Now, what did Asa do in verse 6? He took all Judah, they carried away the stones of Ramah and the timber thereof. So the supplies that the Syrian king was using, that was something that Asa took. And what did Asa do with those building supplies? He built two cities, Geba and Mizpah. Now this is the sort of thing you can read this and think, well, that seems like a fairly strategic thing for Asa to do. Doesn't appear to be anything wrong with that. But let's look at verse 7. At that time, King Hanani the seer to Asa, king of Judah, said unto him, because thou hast relied on the king of Syria and not relied on the Lord thy God, therefore is the host of the king of Syria escaped out of thine hand. And he goes on to say in verse 8 that the same thing. He was wrong to rely on himself and did not rely on the Lord God. Now, how does Asa react? Let's look in verse 10. Then Asa was wroth with the seer and put him in a prison house, or he was in a rage with him because of this thing. That's a fairly strong reaction. So what's going on here? Asa has been reproved by this seer. He's done the wrong thing. He's relied on himself. He has to rely on God. And Hanani tells him, Asa, you've done the wrong thing here. Asa could have said, you know what? I did do the wrong thing. I made a mistake. I need to repent. He didn't do that at all. So he flies into a rage and puts the seer in prison. He doesn't want anything to do with it. And then if we read a little bit further in verse 10, it says he oppressed some of the people at the same time. If we look at the other account in the Book of Kings, it says he inflicted cruelties on some of the people. That's not a very good way to respond if you are rebuked for doing something wrong. He was a very angry individual. What eventually happened to Asa? He was diseased in his feet, and was probably a cause in effect here. He was doing something wrong. He didn't learn his lesson. He didn't repent from it, and God brought the disease upon him. There's a lesson there for us too. What if we're rebuked for doing something wrong? Even adults can make mistakes. I've made mistakes as an adult. I'll only make some in the future if I'm rebuked for it. I'm thinking about this. Am I going to fly into a rage like King Asa did, or am I going to try to humble myself and learn from it and move on? Let's look next at King Uzziah. In 2 Chronicles chapter 26, he did something that was overtly wrong. And perhaps like Asa, they probably had a problem with pride. In fact, in the case of Uzziah, we know for sure that Uzziah's problem was pride, because in verse 16, this is 2 Chronicles 26, verse 16, says when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. There's a problem with pride. What did Uzziah do? He transgressed against the Lord his God, went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. Well, that was something that only the priest should have been doing. But Uzziah says, no, I'm going to be the one going and offering the incense myself. If we read on, some people opposed him. In verse 17, it was Azariah the priest went in after him with 80 or 80 priests. 81 people went in after Uzziah and said, Uzziah, wait, you're not supposed to be offering this incense. This is something that only the Levites should be doing. 81 people going after Uzziah. What does he do? Does he say, you know what, you're right, I'm doing the wrong thing here. I should not be offering incense. This is something only the priests should do. Well, that's not what he says at all. In verse 18, they withstood Uzziah and said, it's not for you to burn this incense, Uzziah, but the priests, the sons of Aaron. What does Uzziah do in verse 19? It says, then Uzziah was wroth. He was angry. He had a censer in his hand, and God struck him with leprosy. Here's another example of someone who made a mistake and was fuming mad when he was confronted by people in a nice way and saying, no, you shouldn't be doing this. Uzziah says, how dare you talk to me like this? He was very angry. His problem was pride. The same thing could happen to us. If we do something we shouldn't be doing and someone comes to us and says, you know, maybe you shouldn't be doing this, are we going to act like Uzziah or Asa? Hopefully not. And the outcome of Uzziah here, he was struck by God with leprosy. The last example we'll consider, even though the Bible doesn't say explicitly that King Herod in the New Testament was angry, we can probably infer that he was. He was reproved by John the Baptist because he had committed adultery. And as you can probably expect, King Herod wasn't very keen to hear John's rebuke. What does Herod do? He puts John in prison, and John is eventually beheaded. Now, we don't know exactly what the reaction of Herod was, except that if you're going to put someone in prison, you're probably pretty angry with them. Asa did the same thing. Asa puts Hananiah in jail because we know that Asa was angry. It's likely that Herod was also angry because he was reproved. The takeaway then is, if someone is reproved for doing something wrong, because of our pride, we can have our pride wounded and don't like to hear that we're doing the wrong thing. Doesn't matter how old we are, whether we're this high or this high. And perhaps you can think in your own life, if you've ever been reproved for something before, the natural reaction is not to take it all that well. I can think of sometimes in my life where I've been all this high about a few things. And there's the temptation to kind of go, how dare you talk to me like that? Like, you know, I'm doing something wrong. I need to humble myself and acknowledge, yeah, there's something I could have done better or different. You think about this proverb here, in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 8, it says, do not correct a scoffer lest he hate you, rebuke a wise man and he will love you. The first part of that verse, these three examples of Asa, Uzziah, and King Herod, if you are going to correct someone who has an attitude of scoffing, they're going to hate you. That's exactly what happened to both Asa, Uzziah, and King Herod. They did not like the people that came after them to initiate the correction. But there are some examples we're going to look at one shortly where someone was rebuked and he did handle it very well. It's a New Testament example. Before we get there, just one other proverb to consider. He who is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a quick temper displays folly. It's the three examples of the kings that we just saw. Those three men are pretty good examples of this proverb here. They were not slow to anger. They had a quick temper and they displayed folly. And the results of them were not good. However, there is at least one good example in the Bible where someone was rebuked and did not fly off in a rage and do the sort of thing that Asa, Uzziah, and Herod did. This is the account of Paul and Peter. Peter was rebuked by Paul. If you have your Bibles, please turn over to Galatians chapter 2. We're not going to read this entire account here. We'll just look at verse 11 here. But it's a good example of where someone was rebuked for doing something wrong. And this went over very, very well. Not only did Paul follow his admonition in the book of Colossians, he did a heavy speech season with Saul. That's what he did when he addressed Peter. There was no indication that Paul was angry or using harsh words or anything else. Galatians chapter 2, verse 11, which says, but when Peter was come to Antioch, I, Paul, stood him to the face because he was to be blamed. And if we read on there, we'll see that Peter was being inconsistent. He was saying one thing to the Gentiles, and then he was changing his mind. He was being a respecter of persons. So Paul rebuked him, and in fact, in verse 14, this would have been a public rebuke, perhaps even more embarrassing. If someone is rebuked publicly, there's a bit of shame that's involved there because other people can see the situation. However, there's never any reference to Peter becoming angry or bitter, which is quite a contrast to Asa, Uzziah, and King Herod. In fact, if we look over in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 and 6, we'll see that Peter thought about humility. And perhaps this account in Galatians 2 is what led to Peter being humble. We don't know that for sure. It may have had something to do with his contrite heart. 1 Peter chapter 5, 5 and 6, where Peter says there, likewise, younger, subject yourselves, rather submit yourselves unto the elder. May all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. Do not resist the proud, and give grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Peter was someone that had to learn this lesson of humility, because he was rebuked by that. And it looks like he took it very well and learned from it, and he in turn is encouraging the believers that he's writing to also be humble. If you also look over at 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, 2 Peter chapter 3 is often used in connection with prophecy, but there's a comment here that Peter makes, a very favorable comment about Paul. And he refers to him in verse 15. Let's just read this verse here, 2 Peter 3:15, an account of the long suffering of our Lord is salvation, even as our beloved brother Paul, etc. How does Peter refer to Paul as his beloved brother? If you're rebuked by someone, you could get angry like Asa, Uzziah, and Herod did. Say, well, I'm going to hold my grudge. My feelings are hurt. My pride is wounded. And I don't like to be told I'm wrong. That's the natural human reaction. That's not, however, how Peter seems to have reacted. In fact, he seems to have accepted the fact that he did make a mistake. He's learned from it. And he's probably grateful, hindsight, to Paul that he had the courage to confront him about his mistake. We might think of this verse in Ecclesiastes 7. There's so many verses, especially in the Old Testament, about anger. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. The cases of Uzziah, Asa, and Herod are a good example of this. The opposite would be how Peter seems to have responded to the correction that Paul gave him. You might also think of this verse in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. This verse says, love is patient, love is kind. If it is not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. In the King James Version, rather than say easily angered, it says it is not easily provoked. And it's very easy to sort of flare up. If you think about the idea of a match, it's like a match. If the flame flares up, that's all what anger can do to us. And suddenly react. Well, that's what Asa and Uzziah and Herod did. However, Peter seems to have handled this in a much better way. I've heard this expression before. It's hard to admit when we are wrong. It's like a bitter pill to swallow. No one likes to admit that they're wrong, but sometimes we are. The best thing to do is just to admit it, humble ourselves, learn from it, and move on. Now, one other verse, it doesn't really fit in exactly, but I've always wondered what book this verse meant. It's in Matthew chapter 5, when Jesus was referring to anger. And he says here, you have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not kill. Whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of judgment. Then he says, but I say unto you, whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause or without reason shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, wrath shall be in danger of counsel. Whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire or Gehenna. I've always read this and never really had a satisfying explanation for what Jesus was actually saying. I came across one commentary that I thought made a good point, so I'll just put this up here. What was Jesus perhaps saying? He had to paraphrase it. Perhaps he's saying that inappropriate anger is worthy of punishment, just like the act of murder. So it's still wrong if you're inappropriately angry. We've discussed how that can happen. The expression of anger in injurious language is even more worthy of punishment. If we're saying to someone, thou fool, that, and because we're angry, that's even worse than just being angry but not actually acting on the anger. Perhaps that's what Jesus was saying. Have any other thoughts? I'd be happy to give that. Let's turn our attention now to righteous anger. And even though it says here on the screen, there are two examples of people who were appropriately angry, I think we should be careful to say they may have been. Really, if we look at the life of Jesus or the things that make God angry, that would be examples of when it is appropriate to be angry. Anyone else, we have to be a little bit cautious, I think. But we're going to look at just two examples here. And the account of Elisha, I'll explain more why I'm going to be using this as an example. It's a rather obscure example. The case of Moses is probably more familiar. But each of these two individuals here were angry about something, and they handled it in a very different way. One was appropriate, and one was inappropriate. They're both appropriately angry. They just handled it in different ways. We'll do the same type of analysis we've done before. Why were these two individuals angry? Were they justified in being angry? And here, where the ring is, the adult's answer is yes, whereas before it was always no. How did the person react, and what eventually happened? Let's begin with Moses. His account will consider Moses was angry, probably understandably so, perhaps rightfully so, because he was unfairly accused of leading the Israelites to their demise. Numbers chapter 20 said that there was no water in the congregation, and they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people quarreled with Moses and said, "But that we had perished, our brothers perished before the Lord. Why have you brought the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness that we should die here, both we and our cattle? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? There is no place for grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, and there is no water to drink." If someone said that to any of us, we would probably be a little upset too, because that isn't all what Moses was intending to do. Is leading them into the promised land. Was he justified in being angry? We would probably say, yeah, he was unfairly accused of doing something that was not the fact what he was doing. He was wrongly accused for leading the Israelites to their death, and that isn't at all what was going on. Now, how did Moses react? Here he does not handle his anger well at all. Perhaps he was justified in being angry, but rather than being gentle, etc., he was harsh. Let's read what happened there. Moses said, "Take the staff and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron, your brother, and tell the law before their eyes to give its water." Notice it says there to tell it or to speak to it. We'll see later that's not what Moses did. "So you shall drink water out of the law for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle." And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded them. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the Lord. And he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels. Shall we bring water for you out of this rock?" Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with the staff twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank and their livestock. Well, this is an angry response from Moses. He refers to the Israelites as rebels, and rather than speak to the rock, he smacks it twice. If you hit someone, you're probably angry, which he seems to have been. What happened to Moses? The Lord says to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe in me, to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given." He was banned from the promised land. But if you think about this proverb again and apply it to Moses, we can see the same thing as we discussed with respect to Asa, Uzziah, and Herod. He who was slow to anger had great understanding. Moses was not slow to anger. But he had a quick temper, he displayed folly, and it cost him the promised land. He was banned from the promised land. And perhaps the takeaway for us here is, what if we act like Moses does? Maybe there's a situation in our lives where we justifiably become angry or frustrated, and we do something in a moment of anger or weakness or frustration. What if it costs us our eternal salvation? Kind of a sobering thing to think about. That's what happened to Moses, not on his eternal salvation, but certainly he was not allowed into the promised land. It's just something to think about. Well, the last example we're going to consider about anger is Elisha. It's kind of an obscure example, and it's the only example I can find. I might be wrong about this. It's the only example I can find of somebody, at least in the Old Testament, who was appropriately angry and handled it as well. Can you think of anyone else who you know about in the Bible, it's in the Old Testament, who was angry and handled it appropriately? This is the only example I can find, and if you can think of someone else, please let me know. Elisha was angry with the king of Israel, and Joash. Let's just read this here. "But now when Elisha had fallen sick with the illness of which he was to die, Joash, king of Israel, went down to him and went before him, crying, 'My father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen.' And Elisha said to him, 'Take a bow and arrows.' So he took a bow and arrows. Then he said to the king of Israel, 'Draw the bow,' and he drew it. Elisha laid his hands on the king's hands, and he said, 'Open the window eastward,' and he opened it. And Elisha said, 'Shoot,' and he shot. And he said, 'The Lord's arrow of victory, the arrow of victory over Syria.' You shall fight the Syrians in Ashdod until you have made an end of them. So far, we haven't seen the anger yet, but it's coming up. And Elisha said, take the arrows. He took them. That's Joash with the arrows. And Elisha said to the king of Israel, strike the ground with them. And he struck the ground 3 times and stopped. And the man of God was angry with him and said, you should have struck 5 or 6 times. Then you wouldn't have struck down Syria until you had made an end of it. Now you will only strike down Syria 3 times. If I was to put myself in the position of the king of Israel, I wouldn't expect that someone would be angry at me if I'm told to strike the ground with arrows and I do it a couple of times. Like I'm following the commandment was given. But that made Elisha angry because he said, you should have done this 5 or 6 times. Right? Well, it's a situation of anger. So was Elisha justified in being angry? Absolutely, yes. He wouldn't have been angry on us. And this is probably an example of him being frustrated. If only he struck the ground more times, he would have completely destroyed the Assyrian host, but that's not going to happen. So Joash, likely made a poor choice. How did Elisha react? We're not told. There's nothing to say that Elisha became really, really hot or that sort of thing. You know, he was angry, but he didn't do anything physically to Joash, etc. Now, what happened to Elisha because of his anger? Nothing is recorded. However, his anger at Joash was the last recorded incident before he died. And perhaps, if we think about this, maybe the reason that Elisha may have acted appropriately, he didn't throw someone in jail, etc., because he was too sick to respond. This is the last incident before he died. He was sick. We're told that in the context. He was ill. He was almost dead. And then he experiences this anger, and he doesn't respond inappropriately. Maybe it's because he was too sick to have a violent reaction. And if that's the case, it's just a suggestion. Doesn't it show us how easy it is to handle anger inappropriately? This is the only example, actually the only example, of someone who did handle anger appropriately. And the person was sick and perhaps not strong enough to act in a violent way. What does that tell us? Maybe it's just so important to try to deal with our anger if we experience it. Now, I'd like to talk next about resolving anger. And if you were to go on a website like Amazon and just type in something like anger, or self-help for anger, or resolving anger, you will find all kinds of books. Here's just a few examples. Anger Management, Anger Solutions, Healing the Angry Brain, Healing Rage, Mad at Everything, Anger Management, etc. These books probably wouldn't be selling unless people were buying them, which means there's probably a valid reason that people want them because they're angry. As we mentioned in day one, anger is a fairly common feature in our society today. And what we've considered so far is people who are inappropriately angry at God. Those were examples. Scott, Cain, David, Jonah, a few others who were inappropriately angry at other people. And then Moses and Elisha, perhaps they were appropriately angry. They didn't always respond well. Now, if we were to do a summary of all the examples of how people reacted when they were inappropriately angry, here it is across the top here. Cain, he committed murder. David, he had a knee-jerk outburst when the ark was about to fall off, and Uzzah tried to catch it, and Uzzah was killed. Jonah pouted. Potiphar jailed Joseph. Balaam laughed out at the donkey 3 times. Ahab sulked and turned his face against a wall. Haman had the murderous plot. Asa jailed. Syria was cruel. Asa, showed no humility, didn't admit he was wrong. Herod jailed John. Moses had an angry outburst, disobeying God. And if we look at any other example of inappropriate anger, someone like Naaman or Judas, etc., you find the same thing. Look how many examples there are in the Bible. People who were inappropriately angry. Just the whole situation here, it's not good. You know, these are not good ways to resolve anger. Now, if we had to do a chart, it might look something like this. If we are inappropriately angry, can we ever act appropriately? I would suggest no, because we shouldn't be inappropriately angry in the first place. And if we're inappropriately angry, it's because we have wrong information, or we're missing information, incomplete information. We didn't get our own way. We were reproved, etc. Those are not good reasons to become angry. So if we're inappropriately angry, we can never act appropriately. But if we are appropriately angry, like Moses was, we can still act inappropriately, as he did by smashing the rock and accusing the Israelites of being rebels. Although if we're appropriately angry, can we act appropriately? I would suggest that we can, but it's quite hard. Really, Jesus is the standard to which we would have to look here. I can sit there and insert your name here. Hopefully we'll discuss the fact that we could be appropriately angry at something. How do we react? Are we going to react like any of the 11 individuals we looked at, or are we going to handle it better? And the fact that Elisha didn't overreact, maybe that's because he was almost dead. Which again, it shows us just how easy it is to flare up and do something that we shouldn't do. So to discuss now resolving anger, I have a few suggestions here. I didn't put this on the screen here, but I think people have to want to resolve anger. It's possible to enjoy being angry about something. I'll give you a simple example. This is going to involve a restaurant. It's not Chick-fil-A or Taco Bell. Once upon a time, we had a takeout from a Chinese food restaurant, and we had, as one of the dishes, it was sweet and sour chicken balls, and it had sweet and sour sauce. That bright orange color, just like the shirt that Virgil was wearing on Sunday night, that bright orange. It was in a white styrofoam container, and I was the first person to get access to the sweet and sour sauce. So I'm looking for a towel. See one? I'll just use this thing here. So I'm going to peel off the lid of the styrofoam container. And then I'm going to dip the chicken into the sauce. So I lift up the lid, and there across the container was a dead dragonfly that looked like that was a big black thing. It looked like a baby pterodactyl. The lid back on, let's put that on the side. Now, I wouldn't say I was angry, I was more kind of repulsed by it. But if you have suppose you have a bad customer service experience, maybe you go to Sonic, just pick it up, and you are waiting for half an hour for your Route 44 limeade, and they take a long time, and then they bring you a hamburger. So then you think, oh, right, I'd probably be a little bit, and if I'm being honest, but I can enjoy being angry. This is the point. I can tell the story about the ghost thing and the sweet and sour sauce, or say, guess what happened for me at Sonic? I was blind for half an hour, I got the wrong order, and you tell other people. It's something that kind of enjoyable, potentially, about being angry. It's perhaps not all that good. So the idea of resolving anger is something that people have to want to do. And as we'll see, it is something that could cost us our salvation if we don't handle anger appropriately. And we mentioned this verse yesterday in James 1, verse 19. If we are angry, we have to get it back. And inappropriate anger can often be resolved by getting the complete story. However, appropriate anger is not resolved by getting correct information. In the case of Moses, he had all the information he needed, but he was still angry. He was unfairly accused of doing something. James 1:19, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. There's a process there. A good listener and the ability to engage in dialogue, get more information if we have to, and then slow to anger. Now, James does not say that you'll never be angry after following this process here. And it does not say, quick to hear, so to speak, never. It says slow to anger. So it's still possible to be angry, even if we do have full and correct information. Well, then, what do we do if we're still appropriately angry? We need to find Bible-based ways to resolve this. Now, perhaps the go-to passage would be Matthew chapter 18. Let's look at what Jesus said here. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the occasion. If he refuses to hear the occasion, let him be sealed like a heathen and a tax collector. There's a three-step process here. You should go to the person first, have a discussion. The person won't hear you. And you bring it to your other people along, and then worst case, you have to tell it to the user. Has anyone here ever tried to follow Matthew 18 with someone else before? I just got a show of hands. Because there's not that many hands up, right? It's something that people, I think, are kind of afraid to do, and I'm someone that does not like confrontation at all. I'd rather run. But when I read this here, it's like Jesus is telling you to do this, and someone has trespassed against you. I don't want to do this. However, Jesus said, this is what you have to do. I've had to do this a couple of times in my life, and it hasn't gone well at all. The response has been quite hostile. I was trying my best to follow the golden rule, but that's not understand the anger of that. It's literally a matter of track. But it doesn't always go as well as you may expect that. Speaking of being angry, don't worry, I'm not going to embarrass them. I think you owe me a Route 44 line. Anyways, if you look at this verse in Proverbs 19, verse 11, it says, the striving of a man makes him slow to anger, death is very overlooked and fast. And I'm putting a second here because if you look at Matthew chapter 18, this is a judgment call. Are you going to go after someone or try and have a discussion about every single little thing that might bother you? That's not what Jesus is saying. It has to be something fairly substantial. This isn't something that you every Sunday you're going to go up and talk to someone and say, hey, we need to have a Matthew 18 conversation. So there has to be balance here. I think that's what's indicated by this proverb here. Sometimes we just have to overlook an offense. But what if there's something that is so egregious that you can't sleep at night? A couple of little experiences in my life on that. We need to follow what Jesus said here. And they both did not go well. I won't share the story, but and the fact that the experience is often, or it's the reason why I was thinking about this topic, because you can, I mean, the Bible says you have to forgive someone, which you can do, at least mentally, but what if you're still angry? Can you forgive someone if you're still angry? I think it's quite hard. So I'll mention a few things about that a little bit later. This slide here is just to make the point, if you're trying to follow Matthew 18, sometimes it's very hard to do that because the person on the other end looks like this or acts like this. You know, suppose you're trying to be as nice as you can, you know, just want to have a chat about something. The person gets all angry and starts to us, and whoa, I better just back off here. Well, that's not what Jesus said to do either. Why is Matthew 18 a good approach? It shows the wisdom of Jesus here. What it does is it gives the offended party the opportunity to release anger in a productive way. Having a conversation, you can explain what is making you upset, why you think it's wrong. And the person on the other end hopefully listens to you and say, oh, I didn't realize that, or you know what, I knew in my heart of hearts I shouldn't have done that. I'm not going to do it any longer. In that sense, it gives the offender a chance to receive correction and learn from it. I've also been on the receiving end of some of these Matthew 18 conversations before, and I think there's probably about, I won't say it how many times because it doesn't matter, but more than once. But everyone who's done that for me has always handled it in a really nice way. You know, I can tell you exactly who it was and what they said. And I think, you know what, that's the model. Like, no one was ever angry or like yelling at me or that. It's always just a matter of fact. I drag it on, just said what they needed to say. I thought, yeah, I can see I need to learn from this and hopefully not make the same mistake again. That brings up this point here. Jesus taught the golden rule. Do unto others as you would want them to do it unto you. You're having a Matthew 18 conversation, either being the person who's initiating it or uninitiating it. We're supposed to be following the golden rule here, especially if we're on the if we are initiating the conversation. The other point I would make is it's important to state that the offense must not recur, because that is how you bring closure to an issue and gives you peace of mind. In the Matthew 18 situations, I tried to work out my myself. I haven't really been able to because the people on the other end were not receptive. And in that sense, I would say I'm in a state where, yeah, I try to follow this. I have to learn to forgive them, but I'm still a little bit angry unless I take further steps to resolve my anger. And what I was holding for in this Matthew 18 is the person who said, you know what, I've made a mistake. I'm not going to do this again. Once that happens, then you have peace of mind. But if you're not able to follow Matthew 18, you never have peace of mind that this person isn't going to do what they did to you or someone else ever again. And then you don't trust them. Because that's what I've if you are unable to get assurance that what the behavior was that made you upset isn't going to recur again, then you'll never have closure to the issue. And you're probably not going to trust the person, even if you're no longer angry. Now, another passage that is interesting to think about is Ephesians chapter 4. And I have a couple of different versions here. The King James version is on the left. Let's read that. be angry and sin not, unless it's not fair, because you can read that and say, wait, is Paul giving permission to be angry? Is he saying, go ahead and be angry? Well, that wouldn't make sense at all, because throughout Paul's epistles, he's encouraging positive Christ-like behavior that is not someone being angry. He's encouraging the fruit of the Spirit. It's impossible then for Paul to be encouraging people to be angry. Now, another version says, be angry and do not sin. That still doesn't really provide a lot of a different perspective than the first translation there. But another version that I found says, which is perhaps a little more consistent with the Greek, it says, although you may get angry, do not sin. I think that's really what Paul is saying here. There are going to be situations in life that make us legitimately angry. Like, say we're in a situation like Moses. Okay, he's wrongly accused. Of course, he needs to be a prophet and accused of doing something. But we can respond in a way like Moses did, and smack the rock and yell at the Israelites. That's not what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be gentle and practice the fruit of the Spirit, which is very hard to do. The other feature about anger we haven't talked about is it is a spontaneous reaction. You say, okay, today at 4 o'clock, I'm going to plan to be angry. Let's put this in my calendar. No, right? Anger is something that just happens. You're in a situation and then something happens and boom. Right? It's like that the match strikes and you can flare up. So in the situation where we're told here, although you may get angry, that's because it is unplanned. As, no one tends to be angry at 4 o'clock. Maybe you go to Sonic and something happens or something. Well, and then in that case there, Paul says, even though you might be appropriately angry, do not sin. Moses did. Go back and look at this church. And if we focus on situations where we are appropriately angry, there's some kind of moral law or something that we think is just here for a valid reason. We have to make sure that we don't lash out and storm up in a huff and that sort of thing. How do we appropriately deal with this? Matthew 18 is one example here. Another verse to consider here is Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31, which is the same chapter in which Paul has just said, be angry and sin not, or although you may be angry, do not sin. He goes on to say, let all bitterness and wrath, anger and clamor, and evil speaking, but be put away from you with all malice. This is a commandment that Paul gives. So clearly he couldn't be saying, go ahead and be angry. Then a few verses later say, well, actually, don't be angry. So I would suggest that the translation of, although you may be angry, do not sin, it's very well for this verse about here. Now, so Paul does not say how to do this. He just says, make sure that you are not angry, wrathful, etc. The word bitterness means acidity or poison. If you have a bitter attitude towards someone else, you are the person that's going to be hurting the most. It's like taking poison. Wrath is this word for passion, as if breathing hard. Have you ever been really angry before you have like a physical response and you can like breathe shallow or something like that? That's happened to me a couple of times. You think, whoa, like what's happening here? I'm upset. Well, it's this idea of wrath. Anger means desire or violent passion. Perhaps if you think about the guy that took out the water cooler, he was in a fit of rage. That sort of thing could happen to us too. We might physically react. Clamor is an outcry. We might denounce or be vocal about how angry we are. All different responses to anger that are not appropriate. In the book of Colossians, Paul says something very similar. He says, but now he also put off all these anger, wrath, violence, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth, which are all inappropriate ways to responding to anger. But Paul doesn't tell us, at least in these two verses here, how we're supposed to do that. But if we read a little bit further, he does give us some instruction here. Now, just as a little aside, if you look at these two verses in Ephesians and Colossians, the idea of putting away from you or putting off, in the Greek it means to take up or away, to sail away or to weigh anchor. And we might think of some mental images here. If we're angry, we're able to resolve it, it's like sailing off into the sunset. We are released from something. Or if we think of a balloon, it just soars up and anger is gone. That's what is supposed to happen if we're putting away anger. Now, if we read further in both Ephesians and Colossians, Paul does say how to put away anger, and it's through forgiveness. So let's read this here. Again, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, and be kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. The solution that Paul gives is forgiveness. He says the exact same thing in Colossians chapter 3. Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy, beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other. As the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. And that follows from the instructions to put away anger, etc. It is forgiveness. So if we had to summarize, how do you resolve anger appropriately in a Christ-like way? What does Paul say in his epistles? It's forgiveness, it's kindness, it's love. In the time that remains, I'd like to walk on a little bit of a slide here. The word forgiveness in Greek there is what it is. It means to grant a favor, to extend favor, freely give favor, to grant pardon. The idea of giving up resentment, we're not going to retaliate against someone else for something wrong that they have done. In Greek, there is a tense called the middle voice. I'm not a Greek scholar, but sometimes exploring how the Greek language works to give us some insights as to what a concept is. And in Greek, apparently, there are three ways to express something. You can have active, middle, or passive. And just to show you what this possible will mean, an active voice means that the subject does the action. We can say something like Jesus teaches, like you put that in a passive voice, means the subject receives the action. We would say something like the disciple is being taught by Jesus. Now, what about the middle voice? The middle voice, what happens there is the subject of the sentence performs or produces the action on itself for itself. Now that's a technical thing. What does that actually mean? Subject is involved in the way the process works. We're going to look at a couple of examples, and this is going to tie into forgiveness, because when we're talking about forgiveness, it's in the middle voice. So that means the person is somehow involved in the process. That's an important thing to consider. When the middle voice is used, the subject is performing the action, but is also involved in some further way in that action. Think about that in terms of forgiveness. If it's in this middle voice in Greek, then not only are we performing it, we're going to be forgiven, but we are also involved in some further way we're going to benefit from. That's one of the nuances that this language apparently has. An example of a middle voice in Matthew 27, verse 5, Judas hanged himself as something that he did. He was involved in the process. It wasn't, of course, a very good outcome. In 1 Corinthians 6, there are three actions here. Can you identify which one is in the middle voice and which three are not? Speaking of baptism, ye are washed, ye are sanctified, but ye are justified. Those three verbs there, which of those is in the middle voice? What do you do for yourself? Washed, right? We cannot sanctify ourselves. We cannot justify ourselves. That's something that God does for us. In Greek, then, in this for the word wash, it's in the middle voice. It's not somehow the subject involved in the action. Therefore, where we're going with this in terms of forgiveness is because the verb is in the middle voice, it's saying that someone who forgives produces the action for himself or herself. It's like this balloon or this sailboat that sails away. We're somehow involved in the outcome, and we benefit from what we are doing. So perhaps the summary is that we benefit when we forgive, and that's expressed by this middle voice to read. Forgiveness is also giving up resentments, surrendering my right to retaliate or hurt you back. However, is it easy to forgive when you're angry? Often anger and forgiveness are kind of concepts that go hand in hand. What if someone really makes you angry and you're not able to have a Matthew 18 resolution? Well, you can say to yourself, I need to forgive this person. I'll let it go. I'm not going to miss you again. I'm not going to retaliate, etc. Underneath, you could still be doing a full burn, which is this idea of anger. Has anyone ever had that happen before? Perhaps. It's not always easy to forgive because you can still be angry at the same time. And therefore, resolving anger is important because it helps us to forgive. Forgiveness is very hard to do. It's not a default choice, especially if someone refuses to acknowledge their fault or doesn't even care if they've caused some kind of answer to hurt. Can you forgive someone and still be angry? What if someone is not sorry and refuses to talk to you? This idea of doing a full burn underneath, you can give like this intellectual answer, yeah, I've forgiven the person. What if you see them a year later, oh, there's that person again. And that's what they did to me, and they still don't care that they've done something that is wrong. You can perhaps hold a grudge and you can say, like, hey, I'm going to forgive them, but I'm still angry. But that's what we're going to talk about next, is perhaps how to resolve anger in this type of situation. I have a couple of suggestions here. And one is just understanding what the person is perhaps going through. Someone who is angry is probably unhappy with themselves. I think I mentioned this last time I was here. I went to a Holocaust survivor talk about 2005, and the Holocaust survivor was the only surviving person in her family, I think, with her sister. So the Nazis killed, I think, about 45 people. And over the course of her presentation, she said she'd forgiven the Nazis for what they did. She just sort of said it as a matter of fact comment. So at the end, she said, are there any questions? And someone said, yeah. She said, how can you forgive the Nazis? They killed your whole family. She said, well, I'm a practicing psychologist, and I realized in my line of work, people who do mean things to other people, they are at heart unhappy with themselves. And it's very hard to be angry with someone who's unhappy with themselves. So so that's something to think about there. That could potentially help. This is something that's quite simple to do. It's helped me. Maybe it will help you too. If you're ever in a situation where you're angry at someone and are having a hard time to resolve the situation, acknowledge to yourself that the person has made a mistake. And why that can work is because we ourselves have also made mistakes. It's not a situation where we're saying that person's made a mistake, I'm better than you. Not at all. We've all made mistakes, therefore we can empathize perhaps with someone else. If you just tell yourself that person has made a mistake, maybe they don't care, maybe they don't see it, maybe they're not going to do anything about it. The person has made a mistake, that can actually bring peace of mind. So that's worked for, that has worked for me. And of course, pray. That's also something that could potentially work. It's probably a good time to stop here. What we're going to do tomorrow is discuss some aspects of anger, the life of the Lord Jesus. We're also going to do one case study in Acts chapter 15, the account of Paul and Barnabas. There's some insights there I think we can take away also for potentially resolving anger. Thank you for your attention. We'll see you tomorrow.